on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania. You're with Paul McIntyre.
Dr. Caitlin Vincent is a lecturer in creative industries at Melbourne University and is with me now to discuss Wagner's life and work. What makes Richard Wagner such a fascinating yet controversial figure?
He is indeed a fascinating figure. I think that there are, you know, it's a complicated issue. I think that his life, for one thing, was quite dramatic and even operatic. He was a gun runner. And, he was a revolutionary. He was quite the womanizer. And he was, also incredibly anti-Semitic. And still, you know, a musical genius and produced these really amazing works and scenic innovations that really changed the foundation of theater and opera. So we have to accept all of that when we think about Wagner and his works. But it is a complicated issue, especially nowadays when we think about issues with Me Too and figures like Roman Polanski about can you actually separate the man from the work? So given that Wagner had these really troubling elements in his life and was such a controversial figure, you know, it makes us really think about his work and how we can think about that in the modern day sense.
What was happening in that part of the world at that time in the, well, getting towards the mid-19th century?
Sure. Well, the first thing is philosophically, there had been the shift towards romanticism. And this is a shift away from the classical era. So this idea of the supernatural and emotions and poetry, as opposed to the classical realism that we saw with Mozart. And for Wagner, he was living in a time where Germany wasn't a cohesive country. It was separated into states. There was a lot of political intrigue. And he was, heavily involved in this attempted uprising in 1849 in Dresden to try and bring a more democratic system. So that was where he became the gunrunner and was making grenades and doing all sorts of revolutionary things as a 37-year-old. And he actually had to flee the country because he was going to be arrested. So he actually fled to Switzerland and he remained there in exile for 12 years. And this was all happening around the time that he was writing and that Lohengrin actually premiered. So he was absent for the premiere because he wasn't able to come back. So instead, he had one of his good friends, Franz Liszt, actually conduct the performance, and he didn't actually see it until more than a decade later.
What do we know about the man himself?
Well, that's the thing, is it's very difficult when we're talking about opera or classical composers. We often have this idea of the myth of the composer genius and this sort of elevated figure who, somehow produced these amazing works and wasn't necessarily a human. But of course, Wagner and every other composer was very much a human with many flaws. In Wagner's case, yes, there's a much talk about his bad temper. He was quite a control freak when it came to his works and was known for writing quite ill-tempered letters to stage directors that he didn't approve of. And he also, had these really strong anti-Semitic leanings. He had a pathological hatred of Jews. But at the same time, he was a womanizer and was very successful with the ladies. The issue, of course, was that many of the women he went after happened to be related to his patrons. So there we get some issues with the debt. But he did have to flee also to avoid his creditors quite a lot as well. But it's just interesting to think about this in terms of that he was a real person. And we can imagine him in the present day probably getting into a lot of Twitter arguments and probably, not necessarily swinging on the more liberal side of the political spectrum, but he did produce these works. And so we have to take everything together as a cohesive whole. And that's actually something that his grandson said, which is that you can't ignore the life of the man and just accept the work. You have to accept both. You can't have one without the other.
Who would you compare him to on a contemporary level?
Well, it's tricky. As I said, he was really anti-Semitic. He published quite extensively on it. Towards the end of his life, he also started to err towards the side of talking about this idea of a superior race and an inferior race, so obviously kind of Nazi leanings. His son and daughter-in-law were quite close with Hitler. Hitler was a great admirer of his and, adopted his music. And from 1933, he actually required the full Nazi leadership to go to the Beirut Festspielhaus to see Wagner's operas. So clearly there's a relationship there. It's hard to say exactly who he would be, but I think that, he certainly would be seen as sort of Nazi tendencies in his writings, but it's hard to say because, it was a different time. He was born in 1813, and at that time, anti-Semitism was very common in Germany. But, you know, you have to think about it in terms of clearly there was something in his work that appealed to Hitler on such a deep level, and that was championed, that Hitler saw sort of the ideal vision of Germany in his in Wagner's work. So that's, again, something we have to think about. But that's also something that Wagner's descendants and his legacy has really had to grapple with, is how can you break away from Nazism? And so after a five-year hiatus, the Bayreuth Festspielhaus, which Wagner founded and created, reopened in 1951. And that was the chance to sort of reset his legacy and break from this Nazi past, which they've done quite well. But even now, you know, most, I think in 2008, there were some issues with someone that they hired who had a swastika tattooed on his chest. And his great-granddaughters, who are now in artistic control of the company, you know, fired him. But it's something that we're really still having to deal with. And it's an interesting issue, for sure.